Ibram X. Kendi is an award-winning best-selling scholar on race. On July 1st, he officially joined Boston University's faculty and is the founding head of a new Center for Anti-Racist Research there. And I should just mention, Boston University does hold the broadcasting license for WBUR. Now, while discussions with Kendi happened over a period of a year, his and the center's arrival could not be more timely, as Boston and the country enter the third month in which protests are happening over racism, police brutality, and the murder of George Floyd by Minneapolis police. Ibram X. Kendi, historian and author most recently of How to Be an Anti-Racist, joins us on the line now. Professor Kendi, welcome to Radio Boston.
Oh, thank you for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure to have you. I want to start with a question you actually probably get a lot, but you have completely reframed the racist versus not a racist, rejecting the idea that not a racist is really even a thing. You argue there's racist and anti-racist. Could you explain for our listeners what that distinction is?
Sure. So I think it's critically important for us to realize there are ideas that suggest racial hierarchy, that certain racial groups are better or worse than others, and those are racist ideas. And then there are ideas that suggest racial equality, and those are anti-racist ideas. There are policies that are leading to racial inequity, and those are racist, and there are policies leading to racial equity, and those are anti-racist. As you can see, there's really no place for not racist ideas or race-neutral policies. You know, our ideas and our policies are either being racist or anti-racist. And when we are expressing or supporting or challenging or defending those policies or ideas, that's when we're being racist or anti-racist as well.
Your book, the most recent one, How to Be an Anti-Racist, really comes from a place of deep personal narrative. It's striking. What made you decide to put your own personal development at the heart of your argument as you lay out your thesis in that book?
Sure. So, you know, as you sort of ask about the heart of my argument, the heart of being anti-racist, the heartbeat of anti-racism itself is confession, because really it's the heartbeat of racism is denial, and the sound of that denial is, I'm not racist. The sound of the confession is, you know what, I was being racist when I said that there was something wrong with Latinx immigrants or Black people. And so I wanted that confession. I wanted that vulnerability. I wanted that self-reflection to really be the pulse of the book. And I realized that I could sort of use my own story to do that.
One of the things that you teach about that just seems so, I don't know, important for the moment is you talk about moving away from terms like structural or institutional racism and instead explicitly calling out and using the term racist policies. It has been clear since quite early on in the coronavirus pandemic that it hits communities of color and vulnerable populations disproportionately hard. I wonder if you would argue that there are racist policies behind that disparity, and if so, if this is a place where you could give us an example or two of what a racist policy is.
Sure. And so I advocate for us to, I still use terms sometimes like structural and systemic racism, but racism is essentially structural and systemic. And also, when we speak to everyday people, when we say structural racism, they may not understand what that means, but if we say racist policies or a series of racist policies, that is more, you know, they can really wrap their heads around that and the way that's impacting their lives. And so in the case of COVID-19, we, for instance, know that more predictive of black people being disproportionately infected and dying of COVID than even their pre-existing conditions is air and water quality of neighborhoods, is access to health insurance, is access to high-quality care, and is employment status. And so those past zoning policies that have led to black and even brown communities being more likely to be near transfer stations or to be essentially polluted are a form of racist policies that are then leading to these disparities.
Let's talk a little now about this new Center for Anti-Racist Research. We know that there's been a long history between academic research, data-driven research, and policy development or formation in the U.S. You, I know, are interested in data science to quantify racist policies and their impact. I also know it's true that there's been concern for a while that big data, quote-unquote, might actually include implicit bias that would disadvantage vulnerable populations in research. So how are you thinking about big data, data science, and some of the questions that you both can and want to use data to answer through the research of this center?
So I think possibly the best way to answer this is to talk a little bit about what we mean when we say anti-racist research. And so racist research, when there's inequities and injustices, ask the question, well, what's wrong with people? How can we figure out a way to change these people, civilize these people? What's wrong with people? That's the fundamental research question of racist research. When it comes to anti-racist research and there's inequity and injustice, the fundamental research question is what's wrong with policies? What's wrong with conditions? What's wrong with structures and systems? And so part of the way in which we even see that there's a problem is by having racial data. And racial data and its collection and its presentation can either be done in a racist or anti-racist form. And so you have some data scientists who just imagine that that data is just removed from human consideration in the way they consider AI to not have the possibility to be inherently racist or anti-racist, because it's made
by humans. AI being artificial intelligence.
Precisely. And anything made by humans can be racist or anti-racist.
You know, you can't say Boston and racism without thinking of our city's reputation. And Boston has historically had a reputation for being a very racist city. A lot of high-profile Black comedians, athletes, broadcasters have told stories in recent years about that. In reading How to Be an Anti-Racist, I was struck that you seem to have been pretty intentional about where you've chosen to live at times in your life. And also, it seems that where you live has affected who you are as a person, how you see and think about the world and your research. So was Boston an intentional choice? And how do you think being in Boston with its history will affect or shape that work?
When I think of Boston right now, I think of a place that sits at the nexus of some of the, with one of the largest, if not the largest concentration of scholars who are studying racism in the country, if not the world. And so that's what I see. And I also see a place that certainly, you have racial disparities here. And those racial disparities are appalling. And if you have a city with racial disparities, you're going to have racism. But I've never lived in a city that wasn't racist in the United States. And then finally, when I think of Boston, I think of a city that in the 19th century was the beacon of the anti-slavery movement. And so why can't we make Boston in the 21st century the beacon of the anti-racist movement?
You know, you have written about the relationship between protests, demonstrations, change in racist policies, arguing, if I understand you correctly, to some extent that rather than starting with hearts and minds, start with policy change and hearts and minds will follow. So given that we are in our third month of seeing protests and demonstrations about racist policies, police brutality, the death of George Floyd, where should the focus and the push be next? What should come next?
Well, we should be razor focused on not only demonstrating the problem through our demonstrations on the streets, but ensuring that it's then leading to power and policy change. And I think that should be, at the forefront of our sort of struggle.
You know, before we let you go, we've just come off of the 4th of July weekend. Here on Radio Boston, we've talked quite a bit in the last couple of weeks about the relationship between Juneteenth and the 4th of July, recognizing that the 4th of July does mark independence, a moment of independence for our country, but not for everyone in our country, and also reflecting on how to think about observing Juneteenth. Can you reflect on that a little bit for us, how you're seeing the relationship between the two holidays and what you think the right posture to those two things as a country should be right now?
So I think, obviously, I believe Juneteenth should be a national holiday. It should be a holiday in which we reflect and remember this nation's history of enslavement, and certainly for Black people to really reflect on the emancipation from chattel slavery. And I think July 4th should be a day not in which we celebrate as if we are all free, but a day of resistance and protest where we're demonstrating and protesting for every American to have the power to be free.
It has been a tough year, to put it mildly. Where do you find your hope? Where are you getting your joy and inspiration right now?
So I'm hopeful because I believe you have to believe change is possible in order to bring it about.
And that is Ibram X. Kendi, historian, author of How to Be an Anti-Racist, and director and founder of the new Center for Anti-Racist Research at Boston University. Welcome to the community, and thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.